Thank you, as always, for listening to Fluff and Crunch. In today's episode, I ask Chris a whole bunch of questions about Cubicle 7's Warhammer 40K Wrath and Glory role-playing game, about which, aside from his introduction to the Warhammer world in a recent previous episode, I know nothing about this game. I know nothing about its system. And he did a really nice job of explaining to me those three things we like to talk about on Fluff and Crunch: system, setting, and story. So if you're behind the power curve like I was about Wrath and Glory, listen to this episode and you'll get up to speed. As always, like, subscribe, join our Discord. The links are in the notes, whether you're on YouTube or the pod. Thanks so much. Now I'm recording. So now how are you?
I am good, thanks. How are you?
I'm pretty well. Any gaming in the last week and some?
I'm trying to think. What did we do on Friday night?
I don't know. Played. I was not there in jolly old England.
I know. I just try to work it out. Oh, so yeah, we played Wrath and Glory, and I played an adventure that was entirely created by just prompts on ChatGPT and me asking it to expand it. So all of the text descriptions were that. I even got it to generate me a random table of events.
Oh, handy. Yeah. Oh, I'd love to, you know, actually, I'd be interested in knowing how you prompted it to do that. I've got ideas spinning right now, but it'd be nice to actually hear it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of thing I'd have to share my screen and show you what I put in, because I think that's the only way of doing it, really. But yeah.
I did not have my regular group this last weekend, but that was planned. There was a local steampunk convention going on, and three of my five players were steampunking it. They had they rented a battle dirigible and no, they didn't. But anyway, I once heard steampunk described as what happens when goths discovered the color brown. And I think accurate. there's some truth to that. But yeah, so they attended that, and so one of my other players was otherwise busy, and so my other player and I got together and played Memoir 44, which was a lot of fun. You ever played that?
No, but I vaguely know what it is.
Yeah, it's a battle level World War II game that has a hex board, and you have these cardboard hex like hills and forests and rivers and junk like that. So you can rearrange the game board and have different battles. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. So we did that. No RPs this last week, but the British failed to establish their landings on Sword Beach, unfortunately.
But you let the Nazis win.
No, I didn't let the Nazis win. I played the Nazis and I won.
I'm appalled. Right, that's it. Quit. Where's my leave button?
Appalled. You know what happened was is the British kept rolling stop for tea. And I was like, oh, stop for tea. Oh, man, aren't you supposed to be fighting a war? Nope. Tea. Anyway. But yeah, it was fun. So it was actually a really nice... as I say, palate cleanser. I had not played that game in several years. And so it was neat to play something that was completely different. And then I've always liked that game. So.
Cool.
But we're not talking about, well, we were talking about war today, as your backdrop would seem to indicate.
Yeah, we should have done the what did you do last week the other way around. It would have segued better.
Oh, well. Yeah, that's okay.
That's why we don't get paid the big bucks.
That's right. That's right. We get paid the little bucks. A very, very small one. But that is the change I can find between my couch cushions. So Warhammer 40, we talked about Warhammer as like writ large, the universe and some of the different game offerings, and said we were going to come back and talk through from a top level angle on what the different major games that are out there now are all about in terms of setting and story, but also system. So I know, aside from what you told me last week and maybe a couple of little sprinkles, I know nothing about Warhammer 40K Wrath and Glory. I know that they wear high-peaked bus driver hats and they wear massive shoulder pauldrons and have like brick-sized magazines, as that weapon over your shoulder indicates, but I know nothing about the setting. So what's the elevator pitch for the setting? What makes it what it is, and then what makes it unique and noteworthy that someone would go, oh, that's a cool setting that I'd want to put stories in.
It's a weird one to actually role playing, because the whole thing of Warhammer 40,000 is like, you know, in the the grim dark of the future, there is only war. It's like humanity is basically fighting on all fronts against the forces of chaos and aliens and people from within who are heretics and, you know, witches and psychic powers gone wild. So it's, you know, it's a big, pretty bleak, pretty nasty setting where actually the actual good guys, so like the Space Marines, who little kids, ooh, Space Marines. Space Marines are, you know, emotionless, genetically engineered killing machines. They're not the good guys. And the guys who run them, the Imperium, are basically, you know, space fascists. So they're not the good guy. There's kind of no good guys. It's, you know, it's a setting which you play in to just kind of survive and do what your bosses tell you and probably come up against kind of bleak moral things. And actually that's why it does quite work well as role-playing games, because depending on how you play it and kind of what kind of characters you're playing, there's often times you're going to come and think, oh, well, I'm not sure that we should do this, but it's kind of, this is what our characters would do. Or, you know, well, actually I'm going to stand up for what's right, but what's right is going to land me in trouble with the, you know, the Inquisition, and I'm going to end up taking a bullet to the head, essentially. So there's quite a lot of good opportunities for different things you want to do. If you want to just do straight up warfare, you can do that. If you want to do kind of more horror kind of things, you can do that. If you want to play it as an investigation game, you know, the original sort of Warhammer 40,000 Dark Heresy game, which is the bigger 40K one when Fantasy Flight did it, that was all about, you know, solving puzzles. Well, so that was about investigations. You know, you'd be seeking out, solving the mystery, what's going on. Oh, it turns out it's a chaos guy, right? We're going to have to kill him. Or maybe it wasn't. It was that kind of thing. It was only then after a while they kept releasing new versions of the game for different things. So part of the difference with Wrath and Glory is when they released it, they said, you can play anything. If you want to play as a bottom level scum ganger, you can do that. If you want to play as a member of the Inquisition, you can be a low level member of the Inquisition, or you can play like a top Inquisitor guy. If you want to play as Imperial Guard, like the really grunts of the military, you can do that. But if you want to play as a Space Marine, we'll let you do that as well. And then they threw in a few aliens and a couple of other things. The idea being essentially like, look, whatever you want to play, this is a Warhammer 40,000 game that'll let you play anything from the, like, from the bog standard human to, you know.
How big's the core book?
I mean, I'm guessing it's about 400 pages.
Okay, it's just a big book.
It's a decent size book. It's that kind of size.
So violent, morally gray,
yes.
Rooted in necessity and practicality more than morality. And if you want to play a game, and I don't say this disparagingly in the least, but it sounds like if you wanted to play this kind of story and you wanted the contrasts to be significant, like that which is the setting stands out and it's in your face and it's kind of cranked up loud. Whether that's something that you would play for months or have a year-long campaign for, totally different issue. But okay, that all makes sense to me. Or sounds like it does, at least.
Yeah, I think one of the things they've done in this, which kind of comes into character creation, is they have this tier system. So rather than trying to make the characters balanced, the characters are not balanced. The idea is you have different tiers. So tier one is your bog standard guys, and you're going to be fighting against things which are, you know, equivalent otherwise, or solving, you know, doing problems where you're not going to come up against a massive demon that's just going to wreck you.
So like if you're playing D&D, it'd be like the first couple of levels. You're just...
Yeah, it's almost kind of like you have your tier one would be like, yeah, you're level 1 to 5, and tier two is up to 10. And then your top end, well, the top end in the core book was tier 4, but I've seen books since where it goes up to tier 5. You can actually take any lower character and just spend a bunch of XP and move them up the tiers. So if you decide, I want to have an Imperial Guardsman, but I want him to be tier 2 because the rest of the people are playing a tier 2, you just have a bunch of extra XP. And you just say, right, he's more experienced, or he's, you know, been better trained or whatever else. And you can do that, which again was a nice way of doing it, because to do that in sort of Dark Heresy was really complicated. If you wanted to take some of the weaker guys and put them in a party with some of the guys from some of the other books, it wasn't really designed to do that. So this system, you know, we've played at two tiers. We played at tier one for a couple of sessions, and we played at tier two with completely different characters. And they are much more capable. So even just going
with tier
one,
I understand this correctly.
Very capable.
I think I do, but let me make sure that I do. So are there would the word be class?
No, it's archetypes. But even then, the archetypes in the book are really just giving you, it's saying, right, well, In fact, the archetypes pretty much work by going, right, well, we've spent this much on your stats, this much on your skills. We suggest you have these talents. You might have a few XP left. And so when I did Scott and Brian's character, I literally took the ones out of the book, spent a few extra points. That was their characters. It was super quick to do.
So wait, wait.
What I could have done, let me just finish.
Okay.
What I could have done is I could have just taken the 100 XP and just constructed a character completely from scratch, and I could have come to the same thing.
Okay.
So the archetype, what the archetypes are doing are taking one of the ideas from the miniatures game, like a particular kind of character, and everything's got XP points, and they've gone, here's your character.
Okay, so they provide you some guidance as to how to achieve that. Okay.
Yeah.
Are there certain archetypes that are generally meant to be used at specific tiers?
Yeah, the way they do the archetypes that they have, here's a bunch of tier one archetypes.
Okay.
Here's a bunch of tier two archetypes, three, four. And it's partly because, so like an Imperial Guards is might be tier one.
Yeah.
One of these guys up here, one of these Adeptus Tech Priests, I think they're like tier two or three. A basic Space Marine is tier three.
Okay.
A fancy Primaris Space Marine, that's tier four. So if you want to play like the really kick-ass guys, you can do that right from the start. You can just start at tier four because it's not really about leveling up. It's more about the right. Well, I want to play a Space Marine. Well, I want to play this.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. So it'd be like the difference between, you know, you're going to play like a military style game and you're just going to play some regular old infantry guy versus someone who's in special forces or even Delta Force, which is a step higher than that. So those characters would be involved in and rubbing elbows with different kinds of other characters, would be doing different, like, as you say, like your bog standard infantryman is not going to be doing like counterterrorism operations, covert type operations. That's Delta.
Yeah, I mean,
okay. That totally makes sense. So
in the adventures we played, we did a, like an introductory adventure where we just kind of get it. But then we did this tier one adventure where the guys were part of like literally an army. An army was attacking this big city, which had been taken over by rebels. And they were like a couple of people in a squad in one tank. And then there was like hundreds of other people and they were doing their own thing, but it was always very clear they were part of a massive big force.
Yeah.
Now, then we jumped that to tier two. You play part of the same battle, but this time they were a special forces unit dropped in from like a drop ship. And then they did their own thing and they had no one with them for most of that.
So you went back, you played multiple stories in the same moment.
Yeah,
that's cool. See, okay, that's interesting because
I really thought that was a cool idea. I mean, there's actually two more. There's a tier three and four.
Was that your idea?
No, it was one of the ones that the Cubicle 7 released. I've never seen anything like it.
Seven people,
such a clever idea that you are basically fighting in the same battle but from different points of view of the same battle.
I like that. Okay, so that's interesting. So you could approach this game from a bunch of different angles that would then manifest differently based on the level being more of a figurative than a literal, but tied to that and the type of character that you play. Okay, I dig that. What else about the setting or the story types? You already addressed those. Is there anything else about that before I start pestering you about how the system functions?
I think the thing is that you can do a bunch of different things. Like our very first adventure was, like, it was an investigation. They had to talk to different people and find clues to find the next thing and search thing. And there really wasn't much combat in it at all until like right near the end. Whereas then when they were doing the war one, it was like sort of fighting all the way through. And then the last one I did was almost, I mean, it was almost like a haunted house thing, because it was constantly like illusions and things assaulting their senses and not knowing what's real and just messing around with different things. And so there's lots of different kind of story types you can run. Because if you want to just run like exploration or be space traders, you could do that. It's not really the kind of thing you would do in 40K, but you know, there's scope for that. So there's a lot of different things. And if you want to do a more like a cyberpunk style, stuck in a grimy city and just trying to fight your way off the planet kind of thing, you can do that as well. There's a whole like another kind of subsetting of 40K for doing that essentially.
That's cool. I like the idea of this. You know, you presented Warhammer 40K as this like enormous setting with so many different layers and angles to get into it, and the potential for all different kinds of types of stories. And it's neat that it sounds like this provides you with all of those kinds of entry points. Tell me about the system. what kind of dice does it use? What is the core resolution mechanic? And then I'll bother you about other parts of it.
So it uses D6s, which makes sense to me because that's what 40K and Warhammer does in the board game. They just, you know, the miniatures game, they're just D6s. So it uses a D6 dice pool system. Most of your rolls, you have attribute plus skill. And you add those two numbers together and you roll a bunch of D6s. And you have a difficulty that you're rolling against. So like a really easy task would be one, but mostly your difficulty would be like three. It goes up in odd numbers. It goes like 1, 3, 5 for some reason. You can use the twos and fours and it did in the book, but in the core book, it suggests you go like 1, 3, 5. And what you have is fours and fives. Now, they use weird language. They say fours and fives are icons and a six is an exalted icon. Essentially, four and five is a success and a six is a double success. But there's other things that the six can do as well. But that's the gist of it. You roll a four and five, you got a success. And if you roll a six, you got two successes. And that's your basic roll.
Hmm.
And then there's like, you know, the various tweaks on it.
How big would be like for a tier one character, assuming that there are differences based on the tiers?
Massive difference.
Okay, so a tier one space marine might roll to shoot someone with that ridiculous rail gun in his right hand.
The space marine can't even start below tier three because you basically
I don't know the lore.
Yeah.
Bear with me.
Yeah, yeah. Your basic tier one dude.
A tier one dude shooting at someone might roll how many dice?
It's probably. Oh, I've got. I think I've got Scott's. This is Scott O'Brien's. Where's ballistic skill?
You tell me, man.
Blah, blah, blah. Three. So yeah, the base. Pretty much he was playing a sister about. Most of his stats are a mixture of twos and threes.
Okay.
And then most of his skills are ones. Well, actually, most of his skills are zeros. He's got a couple of ones and a couple of twos. Okay. So four dice, if you're lucky.
Okay.
Probably only three.
So you roll those four dice and it's a dice pool. It sounds like it's a dice pool system like 2D20. How are modifiers handled? Do you change the difficulty or do you pull dice in or out?
Yeah, it was mostly, so if something that it was actually making things more difficult would be extra dice, it would be putting the difficulty up. So you have to get, two successes, three, four, five successes or whatever to pass. But then there are ways of getting, so if you've got an advantage, it was an extra dice, you could take dice away, kind of. So it's relatively straightforward. You might get an extra dice. Going up a tier made a massive difference because when they were playing with tier two characters, their stats were averaging threes and fours, but they had a lot more skills. And particularly in the things they were really skilled at, they were like really high up there. Okay. So like Scott attacking in melee was frequently rolling 10 or 11 dice.
Oh, wow.
So just from tier one to two, he's rolling a lot of dice.
How does that do for game speed at the table?
I think because you're only, well, for start, I've only got two players. Because you're only looking at four, fives, and sixes, it's very easy to go like, well, put the one, twos, and threes away. There's my fours and fives. There's my sixes. Count it. It's pretty straightforward. When you're in combat, you don't roll that many dice. So mostly in combat, you do a set amount of damage, and then you might have what these things called extra damage dice. So kind of, not really like how 2D20 works because. How 2D20 used to work, where you, like Infinity, where you had a fixed damage, and you only rolled one or two extra dice.
Yeah,
this was like that. So some of their weapons would be like, right, your damage rating is 8, and you get one extra dice.
Okay.
And then if you get those sixes I was talking about, like you roll sixes on things, if you roll way more sixes than you need, you can convert those sixes into some other stuff. One of the things you can convert them into is extra damage dice. So yeah, usually it was pretty quick, you know, because... It's like Shadowrun. Yeah, even if you're rolling 20 dice in Shadowrun, you're only looking for, say, fives and sixes. So in this, because you roll 10 dice, looking for four, fives, and sixes, you can see sixes is easy. You can see the fours and fives. They were very quickly able to count up their dice pools and go, right, okay. Yes, I did succeed. Oh, I've got my sixes, right. That gives me this damage. So, you know, that went very, very quickly.
So this exalted success, rolling a six just gives you two successes. Is there any kind of meta currencies or something like two? Like, there are three of them.
There are three. Doesn't that sound familiar?
Now, technically, in 2D20, there are also three because there are two for players. There's one for players, one for GM, and one that straddles both. Tell me about the meta currencies.
It's very similar.
How you get them and what you do with them.
So, for players, the two meta currencies are the names of the game. I do this every time. I really need to reverse my thing. It's Wrath and Glory. So Wrath points are kind of like your determination in 2D20, in that you get a couple at the start of the session. You can get more from good role playing. You have these actual objectives every session. You're meant to set yourself an objective. And if you achieve that, and some of these are like just singing a hymn as you go into battle for the religious type characters, or giving a stirring speech. So mostly there are things you're definitely going to be able to do. You're just going to have to remember to do it. So you only get like sort of two or three of these wrath points, and they're used for things like, you know, saving yourself a bunch of damage, re-rolling all your dice. That's what mostly Scott and Brian use it for. They do a roll. They go, oh my goodness, I had to succeed on this roll. And they spend a wrath point and re-roll everything that failed. So yeah, they're pretty rare. So they're very like determination and fortune in 2D20. And then the glory points, kind of, not exactly like momentum, but more similar. Again, when you roll, I said, when you roll a six, when you roll more six than you, because six is a double successes. If you say you only need three successes and you roll seven, but two of those were sixes, you take those sixes off, say you hit the target, and you can turn those into glory points. And glory, kind of like 2D20, is a group thing. So if like you generate the glory and you don't need it, your other, and it's similar stuff to 2D20. It's, you can use it to give yourself an extra dice. You can use it to do a point of damage. So it's, you know, minor things. So it's nice to have a stack of glory, but it doesn't do a lot. One thing that was cool about the battle games that we were doing, is they had these tables. It was like calling for support or something, where they had glory spends that you could spend glory to have like a medic run up and heal you. Or you called in an airstrike, or some other guy. There was one where they were fighting these demons. They were getting their asses kicked, and they realized there was a glory spend to have a special weapons team turn up and either help you or give you their special weapon. So like they turn up, give Brian this massive flamethrower. Brian flamethrows all these bad guys, and then the guy's like, "Right, we need to go." Takes his gun and runs off. So that was because it doesn't. I haven't noticed that in the core book. But in those two adventures that we've done, they had these extra spends for glory for doing things like that to make you feel like you were part of a battle and there was other people there.
That's cool.
I really liked that. That was really good. So that's something, if I was playing, I mean, I'm moving on at the moment, but if I was going to come back and play Wrath and Glory, I think I'd try to think of spends for the players like that, because that was really cool. So that's the player side ones. On the DM side, there's a thing called Ruin, and it is quite similar to the Threat, Heat, Water, Doom. In the, I can spend it as a GM for, making my roles better for the bad guys. I can also spend it for making them soak damage. And there's, mostly I generate it. It's quite complication. So the one thing I didn't mention, where every time you roll one dice of a different color. And if it comes up six, that should be something good happening. Or you can just earn extra glory from it. Or if it comes up with a one, that's something bad happens. So like a complication. So same as rolling a 20 on a 2D20, in 2D20, 20 on the rolling a 20. Or I can just convert it into ruin. So a lot of the time, I have tables.
Because it's a die six, you have a significantly higher chance of rolling one of those. You have a 1 in 3 chance of something extremely good or bad happening.
Yeah. So it does.
How complications in 2D20 cannot undo success. If you're successful, but you roll a one, it doesn't undo it. It just adds.
No, same thing. It's like, you achieve what you were doing, but guy ambushes you. Your weapon jams. That's the classic one. It's the easy one. You drop your weapon jams. You lose one of your ammo girlfriend things you. Like you have.
You get a Dear John letter on your little Palm Pilot or whatever.
Yeah, so it's so that's nice. I mean, it felt relatively similar. You know, it didn't feel like, apart from forgetting little bits of the rules, like things like healing. It's one of those things I always have in any game. Oh, how does healing work?
Yeah,
it's that's the awkward. There were times when actually I quite like D&D because D&D is health potions and spells and like, you know, rest. Any other game, oh god, how does healing work? Can you heal each other? Or you have those games where, you know, you can spend an action to do a medicine roll and you're like, okay, but that's in combat. So out of combat, can you do 10 of them? So that kind of thing. We've played 4 sessions and I'm still, every time we want to heal, I have to go back and look at the healing rules because they are not going into my head. They're actually pretty simple. I can't remember them. But yeah, there's a lot of it in running it in play. It felt very similar to 2D20, partly because if they're doing well, they're creating this little stack of stuff. There's a limit. The limit is 6, not 7, but still there's a limit to their glory. They have these points they can spend to when things go wrong. And I'm building up a stack of bad stuff that I can use to help my bad guys out. So, and you know, then I've got these tables of good and bad stuff. So it did feel like running 2D20. Mm-hmm. But then it also feels like 40K because all of the characters, all of the stats, everything in it, and all the weapons are all designed for 40K. So
I don't think I've ever asked you this. Have you ever, or do you play the minis game?
I haven't played. I've played a lot more Warhammer.
Okay.
I have played 40K, but nowhere near as much. Warhammer.
So you have experience in the Warhammer verse in as a minis game, less so on the 40K side.
Yeah.
How does this? I mean, obviously, a miniatures game is a different experience than an RPG. But given the established tropes and just so's of Warhammer and Warhammer 40K, do you feel like the system models the stuff well?
I think so, yeah. And I think it, to some extent it does a better job than the minis game because kind of in the lore and like, you know, if you watch things about it, you know, Space Marines are meant to be these nigh on indestructible warrior badasses. But if you play it on the tabletop, you can have your entire, like all of your Space Marines wiped out because the other guy rolls well.
Okay.
That shouldn't really happen. Whereas you're like your Imperial Guard should feel like disposable people that are just going to die lots. And that's kind of what it, I mean, like Scott and Brian started off with, like they had a squad, we named them. I got them to name a couple of guys each that was in their team. They all died. Like all of them just died. Then they met some more. They all died. And that's literally what they're meant to be like. They are meant to be just like, they're just the poor faceless hordes of the humanity that are just getting gunned down, but they're there to, you know, grind out the battles. And just Scott and Brian's guys being that little bit better or having that spark of something about them meant that, yeah, they got to survive.
Right.
But I mean, there were points where they were really struggling. When they got to tier two, the only reason they didn't frequent, well, they would be all right and they were getting over their heads. Scott's character, who is playing this, he's playing a sister about, so they're warrior nuns. They're straight up warrior nuns.
Okay.
But his warrior nun character has done something wrong and has decided to stop wearing her kick-ass power armor. And so runs into battle literally with rags and bands and a giant, ridiculous two-handed 6-foot chainsword.
Of course.
Which does a lot of damage. She's called a Sister Repentia. Now, luckily, she has a crazy ability where when she should die, she doesn't die. She gets to carry on. So she takes the wounds. He's got this list now of like, he's lost an ear, broken jaw, lost one eye, multiple scars, because you keep tracking all of the like these injuries.
Do these things have mechanical penalties attached to them?
In the case of the eyes, yeah. I mean, Brian's character's had to replace his foot and his eyes. So at some point, he's going to just be a walking, a massive cyborg. But Scott's character doesn't go down. So at the point when they were really in trouble, Scott's character doesn't go down in a fight. He just keeps fighting.
Wow.
Afterwards, he's in an awful lot of trouble.
Okay. That's what I was going to get to.
But yeah, and there's literally there is a point where you can only take so many of these like sort of lethal injuries, not lethal, but like, I think they're called traumatic injuries or memorable injuries as opposed to the sort of the minor ones. So yeah, they're both not that far away from their characters just being straight. That's it. Your character is now dead. It was good fun.
What do you see in this as potential for, do you see potential for long-term, like campaign? Because the way I see it is like, you know, you've got one-offs / you know, short arcs. I mean, I'll just call a one-off is up to like 2 or 3 sessions. 3 would be the way outside for me. An adventure might be 3, 5, 6 sessions, and a campaign is multiple connected adventures. What do you see as like, this game's, where does it fit for you best?
I definitely think it can do it because we've played it with basically one-offs, but then both times we did a one-off and then carried the character onto another one. The XP spending is very, very easy. It's very easy to just go, I'm just going to spend points on stats and skills, but then there's also talents you can get. You know, and then
as you gain experience, you're not leveling. Like,
no, you're like
D&D.
It's
skill based. You're adding.
It's like 2D20.
Okay.
It's very like 2D20.
Cool.
Except bump in stats is, I think, relatively cheaper. You get quite a lot of XP, but when you get to, if so, because you start, a tier one character is 100 XP and a tier two character is 200 XP.
Okay.
So once you get to the next 100, you basically convert up to the next tier. So then all of the bad guys will become better, but also some of your stats are based on your tier. So if you start with 100 and actually amassed 100 more XP, so you're now 200,
yeah,
you basically progress yourself to being a tier two character.
Okay.
So in theory, you could take a character all the way from tier one up to tier five, and what you're doing and what your other things would change. So you'd become more famous. There's an influence stat, you would go from fighting really low level, kind of like, you know, you're a guy who starts off as an investigating low level criminals. By tier four or five, you're fighting against world ending kind of, you know, it's like the D&D thing. It really has got that top end where, you know, you're fighting, you know, these massive.
Yeah, you go from the local hero to the regional hero to the hero of the kingdom to the burden of the world or reality on your shoulders.
I don't know if
you could do that start to finish.
Yeah, in theory, you could. I'm not sure that your character would get that far without having taken so much injuries and damage that they just die.
Okay.
Which is a downside. But then there's weird things to do. So, like, the Eldar, which are space elves, I was reading their book the other day, and they actually have a thing where your character carries around something called a spirit stone thing. And if you die during an adventure, your soul is basically absorbed into this. They take that, they can stick it in one of these like robot things. So your character just gets, you just carry on.
Except then you just go start playing Infinity.
Yeah. Now you're RoboCop. So, you know, there's ways put into them to kind of, if you're playing them, you carry it. I mean, for me, I think I quite like the fact that you can play a bit with these characters, go and then play in a different tier for a different experience, and then go back and do that. The fact that there was just one story, which was one battle with four different adventures in it at the different tiers, and we haven't gone and played the other ones.
Now, is that in the core book?
No, it was. It's just adventures they released. They were like relatively cheap, but they've done four of them, and I think I got the first two. But I know there's two more for the next two tiers.
Okay. So now, what do you see as your plans with this? Like how? I feel like I've got my head around this enough that if I were to sit down and read it, I would already have a jump start on being able to understand how the system works and what it does. But what are your plans for this moving forward?
I mean, right now,
you're playing it right now.
We've played it for four sessions and we're moving on to Age of Sigmar, which is the fantasy thing. Yeah. And I think we're going to be playing that for quite a while. But whereas initially I was like, you know, start of the year, I said, we'll just try some different role-playing games. Mm-hmm. And I don't think this was even my list. But I think I've been playing a mobile game and it got me interested in some of the, like the ideas. Yeah. Well, But the ideas in 40K, there's just so many cool ideas. It's very easy to go, I want to play in that world. And I played a computer game that made me understand. I've never really understand the 40K world from what it's like to be in it before.
Okay.
So I've read the books and go, I don't get what is it like to be in it? And I played this game that gave me a better idea of what it's like to be in the world. So having played that, I felt I could understand what it was like to be on the ground. Picked up this game. You know, I had Wrath and Glory. I just never played it.
Right.
And got it out. And we really enjoyed playing it. So whereas earlier in the year, I think we might play one or two because we really enjoyed it. I think we'll come back, but maybe either with the same characters, maybe with the Space Elves because their book's quite cool. Or there's a Space Marine book coming out and Space Marines be like, right, let's play Space Marines.
Everybody we're just likes them. Cause
gun through all of the bad guys.
They're all the juggernaut with a rifle.
Yeah, exactly. They are. But that'd be fun for a few. So I think that'd get boring after a while, but you know, for a few sessions, I think you said it earlier. I feel like this, to me, I think this game will be a bit of a palate cleanser. Let's play a bit of 40K. Let's play one or two sessions and then we'll go back and play something
else. You know, what's interesting though, this whole tier system and that adventure combination that you talked about where you played at different tiers, you played through the same thing. So you had multiple sessions on the same moment in the story, but with different characters, different tiers. I could see this, based on what you've said here today, I could see this as something that you use as a regular palate cleanser. You wouldn't necessarily, like every couple of months, you're like, oh, let's do some more Wrath and Glory. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to come back with the same characters. You could come back to the same, heck, you could come back to the same like, world cracking battle, but keep hitting it from different angles and move the story. That'd be interesting because then it wouldn't just, you know, sometimes it's fun to blow the dust off an old character sheet of a character that you dig, you haven't played in a while. Like, let's go back to that. That's cool. Sometimes it's fun to just step back into a story within a world that was cool. But this makes it really easy, it sounds like, to hit it then from a completely different angle. That's interesting. I like that idea.
The archetype things makes it super quick to build a character. It's because you don't have to use the way that, but they've kind of gone, look, here's what we're suggesting you build this character as. Yeah, but it'd be easy enough to just like, you know, put that on the character and then go, right, well, actually, I'm going to drop this stat. That gets me a few XP back, and I'm going to bump this stat, or I'm going to change the skills a little bit. So it'd be super easy to do that. But the fact that I know there are two more adventures on the same battle, but for a tier three and tier four, I think we probably will come back to it at some point. But because there isn't like a campaign book, there's lots of separate adventures, but there isn't a big campaign. And I haven't bought anything more than the core book. I was like, oh, I'm not sure what I want to do. But mostly because me and Brian have started playing Age of Sigmar, and I'm reading an Age of Sigmar book, and I wanted to get into the Warhammer. And there's lots of story things there, and I have got a six-part adventure book for that. So we're going to move into playing Age of Sigmar now. But yeah, I think we'll come back. Whereas when I started, I thought it'd be a one-off. I thought we'd play one, maybe two sessions. That'd be me done. Mm-hmm. But we actually had so much fun. The system actually works really well. The fact that it can do sort of the big battles, but it can also do much more grounded investigation, you know, talking to people, things. And it did both of them equally well. And the setting's big enough to do all kinds of different stuff in it.
Yeah.
You know, if you just want to be members of the Inquisition who are rooting out heretics and witches and things, and you're just always doing that. I know they've created another system to do that, but Wrath and Glory, I don't see why it can't do that perfectly well. So I was really impressed by it. Makes me wonder why I didn't. Well, I think the reason I didn't play it in the past is that I didn't get
what it looked like. And it's the same. It sounds like you're saying the same kind of thing that you have, that I've agreed with you about over Mutant Chronicles.
Yeah, 100%.
What do you do? And now you have a sense of, okay, this is how all these pieces fit together, form a world in which I would want to play and have stories.
Yeah.
And once you have that sense, okay, now I can go make it happen.
Yeah, cool. It's definitely that. Like, I understand what it looks like from a battlefield, like view, but what does it look like when you're not in a battlefield? I never got that in the past, and I've read or seen enough stuff recently that I was like,
there's clarity
when there's
clarity when there's a hill, a river, and a big battle and a multiple army. That there's clarity in that, not in what does it look like away from there. Good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I will do this. I'll put links to the Cubicle 7 site so that it's easy to find. And we'll come back to this, obviously, because I'm curious when you play it again, you do some more stuff with it, we'll need some session reports.
Okay.
That's interesting. It sounds to me like it's not what you expected it to be, and that's cool.
No, I mean, yeah, it was one of the things I was like, I'm sure I have this role-playing game. And I go and like dig it out and find, I have got it. And I start reading through the thing.
I did spend money.
I get
this
system now. I understand this. And yeah, let's play it. And yeah, it was really good fun.
Good. Thank you, as always, for listening to Fluff and Crunch. You can join our Discord. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel, all through the links in the show notes. Thanks again. Have a great day. We look forward to talking with you.